Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode one of Viltrumikes, an Invincible podcast here on the Aspect Network. I'm one of your hosts, Brianna Romero, and joining me to discuss the latest and greatest in the world of Invincible is Negan Fu. Negan, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Very just happy that Invincible is finally back and that we get to talk about it, because there's certainly a lot to talk about.
Definitely.
Today, we are recapping and reviewing the highly anticipated return of Invincible Season 2 with Episode 5, This Must Come as a Shock. And come as a shock it did.
Yeah.
Okay, let's kick off this week's show by just jumping into our overall thoughts. Brie, I'll start with you. What did you think of Episode 5?
Well, it was crazy. I immediately texted you afterwards and I said, whoa, that was crazy. I definitely think, you know what? I'll say it. I think it was worth the wait. I think with an episode like that, we built up so much anticipation for it. And I think they really paid off what we were, the long wait. I just think there was so many questions were answered that we were left with at the end of episode 4. But now I feel like there's so many more questions. So I'm excited that we get to see a new episode next week. Overall, yeah, I think it was a great episode. We touched on all the characters, a lot of the plots, subplots. We lost some characters. We gained some characters. Really crazy, but really, really great at the same time. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was definitely worth the wait. And one thing I thought while watching was, because obviously this season, unlike the last season, which I think was just, 8 consecutive weeks, this one was obviously split into two. And so it does kind of feel like season 2, episode 4 and season 2, episode 5, like it definitely feels like they were written with the intention of, it's going to, season 2, episode 4 will cap off in November, and then episode 5 will pick up a few months after that. It's like they kind of wrote it with that in mind, I guess, that the audience would be coming back to this world and after how crazy the season 2, episode 4 was. There's like, they give us a lot of time to breathe, I feel like, at the start. And then obviously it gets a bit more intense later in the episode. But I think it would have been, as much as I missed the show in its hiatus, I could see how, watching that big like Viltrumite battle at the end of episode 4 and then only having to wait a week and then jumping into this one could have been a lot. So I can kind of, it kind of makes more sense now, why it was split up, and I think it was worth the wait.
Yeah, I completely agree. Episode 4 definitely felt like a mid-season finale, and this one definitely felt like a mid-season premiere. So they did a wonderful job doing that. Well, let's kind of go through what happened in this episode. So much happened. So I think we should kind of go through some of the biggest things that happened. We start with Mark not back on Earth. And I'll say it, when episode 4 ended, I was like, how is he supposed to make it back to Earth? He's beaten and bruised and bleeding.
That's true, yeah.
I was like, what? And the Viltrumikes were like, or not the Viltrumikes,
we're the Viltrumikes. They're the Viltrumites.
They're the Viltrumites. They were like, you have to go back to Earth now. But I was like, you're not going to help him? And then I was like, oh, okay, he's not going to go back right away. So it was really cool to see him stay back and heal up and help rebuild Andressa's world. And it was also so interesting to see how old they were. I was shocked. I knew that they aged quicker than humans or quicker than Mark. But I did not think they would age that fast. When Nulzahl, is that how you pronounce it? I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. When Nulzahl walked out, I was like, oh my God, he's old now. This is so sad. So I was really curious, like, what that time difference was. But then it was revealed to us that he was there for 2 months.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Very cool.
Then we,
and we should go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh. And then we see meet more of Oliver. I think he's gotten bigger. And you just see Mark's demeanor change with him.
Yeah.
You can see that he's like approaching him with a more brotherly kind of love. And then of course,
yeah,
Andressa tells Mark, like, I'm gonna die soon. Like, can you please take him? Which was crazy.
Yeah. And I love how, oh, we should also maybe preface all this by saying that neither Bree or I have read the comics. You know, I've kind of like, I'm aware of some of future events, some general lore, you know, some characters that I know are supposed to come into play later, but I've never sat down and actually read it, mainly because I love the first season so much that I wanted to just watch the show mostly as blind as possible. And so I know Brie is, you know, a similar
yeah,
approach.
I have nothing. I don't know anything that's about to go down. So it's really interesting watching these episodes with no knowledge of what's going to go down. So
yeah,
that was like the first part of the episode. If you want to jump into the second part, we'll jump more, or we'll dive deeper into more detail later on.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of how the episode starts. Again, it definitely gives us a lot of time to breathe. And then we kind of move into Earth. Mark goes back to college, talks to Amber, talks to his mom, brings Oliver with him. Surprisingly, like, after the events of episode 4, I was kind of expecting like maybe a lot of urgency at the start of this episode, but it's surprisingly laid back, which I understand, I think, from like a storytelling perspective, like, give us that breathing room. But it is almost like, if I was Mark,
yeah,
like, I'd be like, holy shit, guys, like, I'd be so stressed going back to Earth.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't really have a choice, though.
Yeah,
he's too human. He has all these feelings. I don't think he really had a choice what to do with Oliver. I mean, it was really like an ultimatum, like, you leave him here and his mother dies and the rest of his community dies, or you take him to Earth. So yeah, but we can dive more into that later.
And then there's some stuff with Donald that we'll get to later, which is pretty interesting.
I'm rooting for him.
I like Donald.
Team Donald.
And then kind of in the back half of the episode, we're with Invincible, and we're with the Guardians, Adam, Eve. And then it's pretty action-packed in like the last 20-ish minutes. So a lot to talk about there. They finally bring back the whole Mars plotline that was set up in like season 1, maybe episode 3 or 4. Pretty early on. And then I think at the end of season 1, in like that big montage, there's like a clip of the sequence maybe starting to take over.
Yeah, I've always been so curious, like, when we were going to come back to that and like what that meant for Earth. And now we're finally there. And I mean, at this point, I thought it was so hilarious when Rexplode was like, it's not like there's going to be two major earth-shattering events happen at the same time. And then there was. It was crazy. He really told us what was going to happen. Yeah. But yeah, we were with the guardians of the globe on both Earth and Mars. Or on the way to Mars, I guess.
Yeah, I think the whole like Mars side plot is definitely, I remember when they set it up and then they just don't really touch on it again because they kind of explore other plot threads. But it is like, I remember being kind of stressed out by it when they set it up, and I was like, oh, this is going to be such an issue later. And finally now they're finally tackling it, and obviously we'll go into more detail soon, but I am kind of curious, like, how big of a moment in the show it's going to be or not. Like, if it will get resolved in the next episode or maybe carry out through the rest of the season.
Yeah, I feel like they do bringing it back to how it kind of stressed you out when it first happened. I think this show does a really great job of presenting this issue that we know is going to be really bad and then kind
Yeah.
of leaving it for later. And then when it comes back later, it's terrible. So much time has been in between that, like the issue has just like built up more and more. Like the
Yeah.
Cequids have built more and more power. So I think that the show does a really good job at doing that, and they never leave anything behind. They're never like, here's this thing, and then they always come back to it, which is really great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a pretty like so far very well like thought out. And obviously it's based on source material that kind of has mapped it out for them, but still like implementing it into like a episodic format and kind of strategically placing all these like plot threads. They're doing really well with it so far.
Yeah, and I feel like also what the show does a great job of is wrapping up these various problems very quickly. Like what you said with the Mars mission, you were curious if it was gonna continue for the rest of the season. So I'm curious what to see what they do with that, because I feel like there's a good balance in the issues and how quickly they're able to handle them. And how detrimental they are. So, really, really curious to see where that goes.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a lot of just potential, like you send all the guardians over, and then there's a lot of potential for like one or two of them to be taken over by the Cequids, and maybe if they have to fight each other. I don't know if like if you're taken over, if that means you die or if you can be like free from it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a good question, and we can circle back to it in a sec. But yeah, so there's a lot going on there, and then on Earth, our few remaining heroes gotta tackle the Lizard League. Who
Which
are
I
such a,
completely forgot about.
yeah, I forgot they're up to something. Such a goofy, a goofy set of characters, I think intentionally, but we'll have to talk about it a lot because it's a pretty intense fight scene.
Yeah, King Lizard reminds me a lot of the Riddler,
Yeah, yeah.
but specifically the Riddler in the Harley Quinn series.
Oh, okay,
He's just kind
yeah.
of goofy. I think King Lizard definitely has a lot more power in the Invincible world, but he just has that like goofy demeanor to him where you can't really take him seriously because he's taking himself too seriously. He
Yeah.
thinks he's the greatest ever, but I don't know. Maybe
Yeah.
he is. Maybe he is. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll be surprised by him.
Yeah, he's pretty comical. But clearly they're nothing to scoff at least against some of the weaker heroes. So we'll definitely talk about that. And then the episode, ends on two big cliffhangers, and then there's a post-credit scene featuring Alan the Alien, which is such a cool guy.
Such a cool guy. I was devastated when I thought we lost him. I was
Yeah.
so sad. Yeah. So I was so happy to see him and hear his voice again.
Yeah. Seth Rogen just has like a really, really like comforting voice.
Yeah. It's like it's the kind of voice where you can obviously tell that it's Seth Rogen, but it works so well with all of the different characters he voices.
It
It
does work really
adds
well.
such a character to them, such a depth to them.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to jump more into that post-credit scene because I was not expecting it at all. I know Invincible always has these incredible post-credit scenes too. I don't know why I was expecting any less in this episode. All right. When we come back, we'll be talking even more about some of our favorite moments and elements from this week's episode. We'll be right back.
Hey, Aspect listener, my name is Alex.
And I'm Kate, enjoying this show on the Aspect Network.
Then check out Bending the Narrative.
We are your one-stop shop for everything in the world of Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Each week, we go back and discuss your favorite episodes of the series with a particular focus on the characters and narrative threads that tie the series together.
In addition to discussing the original series, we also dive into other stories in the world of Avatar, like Legend of Korra, the live-action Netflix series, the books, the comics, and more.
Join us as we travel the globe with Team Avatar and discuss one of the greatest animated series of all time on Bending the Narrative here on the Aspect Network.
Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Viltrumikes. Before the break, we discussed some of our overall thoughts on the episode, but now we want to dive into specific parts of this episode we really enjoyed. Negan, let's start with you this time. What were some of your favorite moments from This Must Come as a Shock?
Okay, wow. I mean, there's so many. The show is just so good at like keeping pretty engaging like plot threads, like character arcs going kind of at all times, and balancing them within each episode. I think we'll start with, before we get into maybe some of the more eventful stuff this episode, we'll start with the little Donald plot line going on. I truly have no idea where it's going, but it's very obvious. It's kind of Blade Runner, Westworld-y. Donald finally he just confronts Cecil, and Cecil doesn't try to hide the fact that I guess they're just cloning him. I think this is, or like making like a robot duplicate. I think it is the Donald that dies in at the end of season one. Is that implied to be like the real Donald?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And then I think we just are left with his brain. I think Donald is a lot smarter than Cecil thinks he is. I have not been a big fan of Cecil lately. I know he has a big job, and I know he is a smart man, but can the man please have some empathy?
Yeah, he is kind of, yeah, he's kind of a hard ass, but I suppose when you're like trying to protect the earth, kind of make some tough calls.
I guess.
But he poses an interesting question that I was thinking about during and after the episode. Because again, he doesn't really try to hide the fact that that's what he's been doing. And he says something like, would you rather be dead? I thought this was like a really interesting topic because, obviously in this world, and specifically in Cecil and Donald's line of work, their lives are constantly at risk. And obviously Donald sacrifices himself at the end of season one. And then Cecil brings him back, or not the real Donald, but essentially as Donald with the same like consciousness or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. So what do you think about the idea of like if you're in this line of work, would you rather just straight up die, or would you rather maybe have the knowledge, or maybe not, like how Donald at first didn't know that he never died. I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, you brought up a really interesting point where Donald sacrificed himself at in the season one finale. And so I wonder if in those moments when Donald sacrificed himself, if he kind of accepted his fate. If he was like, okay, you know what? Like, I know what's about to happen. He had this brief moment of reflection. He was like, I know I'm gonna die. Like, it's okay. You know, so it kind of brings that to question too. Like, what if Donald was ready to not come back? But
I
going to
suppose
you go.
I was just gonna say, I suppose Omni-Man had basically had like crushed his spine or something.
Yeah, that's
So
true.
quality of life after that, even if he survived, maybe wouldn't have been that great.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I feel bad for Donald. But the question you ask is also a really interesting one. I think it would, how I would want it to happen for me is I would want to know that we have this robot brain thing and that it is a possibility. And to be presented with the possibility and be like, hey, like, this is a crazy line of work we're in. You could die at any moment. Like, we're literally dealing with superheroes and super villains. But, like, if you were to die, like, would you want to become brought back by this thing? I would want to know about it first. I would have similar feelings that Donald has right now if I was just brought back and not told about it. Like, it is kind of crazy that Cecil didn't tell him at first, but then when Donald finally figured it out, he was like, okay, yeah, I'll tell you. So it's just interesting. It's interesting. What would you want? What is your ideal situation?
I think like if I were Donald in this situation, like no doubt you would have a bit of this existential crisis if, and I think Cecil kind of points that out, like no doubt you would have this existential crisis if you found this information out. Like no doubt you would be like kind of confused and angry. And so I don't know. I think even in this crazy world, like I think that would still be a hard thing to come to grips with, and like and then still kind of be expected to like go to work and do your job. Yeah, so I could see like not being brought back as an idea. You know, that could be ideal, but I think if you were brought back, like, would you want to know? I don't know. I'd be curious to see like if this version of Donald is killed again, whether it's intentionally like by Cecil or it's by an external threat, and if it just repeats the process. I imagine Cecil would get sick of having to go through these hoops every time, though.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I forgot, I was going to say something, but I forgot.
That's okay. If you think so, we can come back to it.
Cool.
But
Did you have
yeah.
any other favorite moments?
Let's see. Honestly, I mean, I think there's a great there's a lot of like great just interactions between Mark and his mom. And who like Debbie is such a well-rounded character, which I feel like is not something, you know, for like the mom of a superhero, it's not something you see usually in like a DC or Marvel property where that character is just as nuanced and gets just as much like prominent narrative time as like the lead heroes. So I think that's just, it's really refreshing anytime we get to see her and her interactions with Mark. And she's surprisingly chill. And she like has some, she kind of points it out that she'd be watching over the kid that Omni-Man has with another woman. But then she is surprisingly chill about it.
Yeah, she's such a great mom. I know, I think she just sees how much Mark cares about Oliver. And so she like puts her feelings aside. And like I said in episode zero, I love how this series not only focuses on the superhero characters, but focuses on the non-superhero characters and how they're dealing with living in this world with Debbie and Donald and Cecil. I think it's so interesting and makes it so much more relatable in a way. We can just draw, we can understand like where they're coming from, and I have no idea what I would do in these kind of situations, but it's nice to see like their point of view.
The show always feels kind of, for as fantastical as it gets and silly as it gets, it does always feel pretty grounded. Especially for an animated show, which I like.
Well, I guess we can jump in into some of my favorite parts.
Yes.
My favorite scene was definitely when Adam Eve and Rexplode had their moment together, or just Eve and Rex in this moment. I feel like it was so human, and really sweet. I've really come around to Rex. At first I was like, God, like this guy's really annoying. He was like the staple douchebag character. But now I really loved seeing him in this scene and kind of coming to her knowing that the Guardians of the Globe need her. And knowing that Eve needs them equally as much. So yeah, I really, really loved that scene. I think it shows a great character arc for the both of them. So I'm excited to see where they both go this season. For a while, Eve was stuck in like a really depressive state, and I felt really bad for her because I know how like freaking powerful and cool she is. So I'm really, really excited, and it was awesome seeing her use her powers this episode.
I agree. Yeah, Rex is, I think this is maybe the first time in the show so far that we've seen him actually be a bit more empathetic. Not such a, such a douchebag. And also just the first time maybe where, it's his idea to recruit Eve. Maybe his first like actual idea or just like general contribution, like a strategic contribution.
I'm here for the Rex Blode redemption arc. Let's talk about Mark coming back to Earth and his interactions with Cecil and Amber. I thought those were really interesting.
I especially like the when Cecil kind of teleports into the dorm hallway or whatever, and he's like, we're he's like, my team is gonna watch over Oliver. But Mark kind of just stands his ground. And I think Cecil kind of knows like he doesn't want to enter into any like conflict with Mark. One, because he kind of needs him on the same side, but also because like Mark is just really powerful. Like who knows if Cecil could stop him or, it would be kind of difficult.
I see where Cecil's coming from. I do. I am not an Amber fan. I'll say it. I know some people may disagree. I'm sure not a lot do, though. She's just like okay. I thought it was so interesting. At one point, she was like, Oh yeah, my uncle passed away. But she said it in such a weird way, and she was like, "But I got through it." I was like, "What? What kind of what?" It's a crazy thing to say about a family member passing away. I don't know. She's okay, I guess. We'll see where her character goes, but I thought it was really interesting when we jump from Mark telling Amber he has to go to space over the phone, and then we jump to Mark hugging Eve. So I think that implies a lot, and I feel like I already know the answer to this, Megan, but are you team Amber and Mark, or are you team Eve and Mark?
I think I've been team Even Mark since like season one, episode one. I can't even remember what their first interaction is in the show, but yeah, I mean, how can you not ship them?
Yeah, I they would be the coolest couple ever. Yeah, I don't know. Do you think the show is gonna go there eventually? Do you know?
I think so. I mean,
I hope so.
I imagine, like, again, I agree with you with Amber is that she's just kind of like boring. And it's not even fully because it's not really because she doesn't have powers. Like, Debbie doesn't have powers, but Debbie's really interesting and just nuanced. But Amber just isn't really given like enough narrative prominence to really captivate me. Eve is like the second or third biggest character on the show. So yeah, I mean, I imagine Amber will probably be slowly phased out as the show progresses. I can't imagine, like, I don't know, maybe if the show runs for like 9 seasons and she's still like popping it, I don't know, we'll see. But I agree, she's not, every time she's on screen, I'm not exactly like, hyped.
No, yeah. And I feel like she is struggling with being with a superhero in the first place, that maybe like that will be their breaking point. But we'll see. Let's jump into the Guardians of the Globe entire back half of this episode. We have so much to talk about, so much to cover, so much happened. What were your thoughts on this like second half of the episode?
Yeah, I mean, then this is where it's, there's as much, there's like a lot of setup at the start. Kind of gives the audience some time to ease back into the world. But then, of course, there's kind of two major threats at play, which we've touched on earlier in the episode. But the first one is the Sequids are headed towards Earth. And we finally officially, we knew Shapesmith was a Martian, but now, like, it cat's completely out of the bag. Like, all the Guardians know, Cecil knows. And
They've
then they're on
always
their way,
known.
yeah, they're on their way to stop that. And I mean that whole plot line is definitely really exciting, really, really what's the word? Really intense, I suppose. But I do think the part of the back half of the episode that I was maybe even a little more engaged in is Rexplode, Shrinking Man, Duplicate going to fight the Lizard League by themselves?
Yeah. That was a crazy choice. I was like, "Oh, just these three are gonna fight these really strong villains."
And I mean, we gotta talk about, like, I'm glad, I'm so like, I it looks like both Duplicate and Shrinking Ray are just dead. I don't know if they're gonna come back. If, I mean, Cecil is always doing something, so we'll
That's
see.
true. Yeah, I don't know. That was brutal. The whole entire the whole fight was brutal. They were getting absolutely bodied. It was hard to watch. Yeah,
And
and
Duplicate, I mean, that power kind of sucks.
yeah. 'Cause there's not much else to her other than that she can duplicate herself, which is like, that can be a good power to have in some scenarios, but in scenarios like this, it pretty much seemed useless. Maybe it was a long time coming for duplicate, but I was shocked. I did not think that was going to happen. Yeah.
I suppose if she couldn't handle the Lizard League, I don't know how much help she'd be once the Viltrum Empire finally comes.
Yeah.
Because she's really just a human. It doesn't seem like she has any, you know, enhanced strength, or she's not invulnerable. She's just like kind of acrobatic, but
oh man, I just had the realization that a mortal and duplicate were hooking up.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Poor immortal.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you there, but I just had that realization.
Here's my question. Okay, if you were a duplicate and you're going into like this intense battle, especially when the heavy hitters are not with you, I know it's like the Lizard League, but wouldn't it be strategic to like have one of you just kind of wait behind just in case?
Maybe, but then you would just be watching Rexplode and Shrinking Ray like get destroyed. Like, would you probably want to step in at some point.
Right. But I mean more like if she can duplicate herself.
Oh,
like,
I see what you're saying.
Couldn't she like send, you know, five of them in and then just have one copy of herself that like waits outside, you know?
Yeah. She didn't think about that one.
Yeah. That's tough. What I would do probably.
If I were in that situation. Yeah, that's hilarious. I really was rooting for Shrinking Ray. I thought she was gonna make her body bigger or something. I thought she was gonna make it out of there, but she didn't. And it was so brutal how you just hear him swallow. And he said something along the lines of like, or yum, delicious. I was like, no, it's so bad.
It's such a like grotesque image of like her like expanding in him, but him like being able to like contain
it.
And so who knows how big she is in there, but either way, Jesus. She's just a corpse inside of him.
And she had to like die in there. Like, that's terrible. Oh, my God. Poor duplicate. Let's talk about Rexplode. Like we said earlier, we're rooting for him. And so I was really happy that he made it out of there alive. But he obviously didn't make it out of there without losing his hand in the process, which was pretty cool. But I feel really bad for him. But also, he hasn't made it out of there yet because King Lizard has a gun. How lame.
Has a gun.
How lame of him. A gun?
Yeah. I assume, like, the way they end on a cliffhanger, like, he's got to get out of it somehow.
I hope
so. And plus, like, he is kind of a great character. Like, there's so much potential with him. I feel like they can't kill him until a little later, at least.
Yeah, I feel like he had too big of a moment with Eve to kill him off. Or maybe that'll just make it worse. I don't know. I think he'll make it out, but I wonder how. I definitely wonder how.
I think so too.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, I know I said it earlier, but I loved seeing Adam Eve using her powers. Mm-hmm. And I think the more she uses them, the more powerful she'll get, but man, I have no idea how they're gonna beat their way out of the millions and millions of sequids.
I know. Yeah, the most of the Guardians go up there, and it does seem like they are in a bit of a pickle. Again, it will be really interesting if we see some sequid action, and they like take over Bulletproof, or they take over Immortal.
Oh yeah, who do you think, do you think, if any, do you think any of them will be lost?
Well, I guess we've already they've established that they can't penetrate Mark's skin. I wonder if that is the same for like someone like Immortal or Bulletproof, who are clearly a lot more invulnerable than just a human. I think if Rudy stays in his robot suit, he would theoretically be fine. I suppose Adam Eve could be at risk, but it's like, can they, you know, get to her with what her powers are? Like, probably not. But it will be really interesting to see. I think if we were going to lose anyone, it would probably be Bulletproof, just because, you know, he hasn't been in the show that long. It's also his fault because he kills one of them, and then it's like a hive mind.
Oh yeah, it's so interesting. I wonder who, if any. I don't know. I kind of have a feeling. Oh, maybe I guess Monster Girl, if she's in her monster state, she'll be okay.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Oh, I guess we have to wait until next week. I can't believe it. Do you have anything else to say before we wrap this portion up, Negan?
No, I think we'll touch on a little bit more. Kind of the final moments of this episode in a bit. We'll kind of discuss the ending and that, you know, post-credit scene that is pretty exciting. And then kind of where we think season two will go from there. But yeah, we will be right back.
Hey, Aspect listener, my name is Alex.
And I'm Kate, enjoying this show on the Aspect Network.
Then check out Bending the Narrative.
We are your one-stop shop for everything in the world of Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Each week, we go back and discuss your favorite episodes of the series with a particular focus on the characters and narrative threads that tie the series together.
In addition to discussing the original series, we also dive into other stories in the world of Avatar, like Legend of Korra, the live-action Netflix series, the books, the comics, and more.
Join us as we travel the globe with Team Avatar and discuss one of the greatest animated series of all time on Bending the Narrative here on the Aspect Network.
Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Viltrumites. To wrap up this episode, we wanted to go in a little more detail about that crazy ending and where season two will go from here. So, Brie, where do you think these last three episodes of the season are going to take us?
Oh my God. It's just so crazy when you say last three episodes, because I'm like, what the heck are we going to cover in three episodes? I know
Yeah.
we've said it that every episode covers so much, but I'm like, how in the world are we going to wrap up this season in just three episodes? It's crazy. I mean, at the end of episode five, the Guardians are all down so bad. Robot is out of his suit, or Rudy is out of his robot suit.
Yeah.
Eve is knocked out. So obviously we're gonna address that in the next episode, but we still have the multiverse plot to address. We have the Mahler twins, Angstrom Levy. It's gonna be a crazy end of back
Yeah.
half of season two. I don't even know where to start. Do you have any thoughts on it, Negan?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely backed into a pretty tight corner at the end of this episode. So I imagine I imagine the next episode, like, it's such a big threat with the sequence that I imagine the majority of episode six will probably focus on this specific plot line, and maybe some more of the Lizard League as well, and then maybe they'll kind of intersect towards the end. I don't know. I can't imagine the secret storyline going past this season. Feels like something that could and probably should be wrapped up in season two.
Yeah.
As for all the multiverse stuff with Angstrom Levy, I think that's how you pronounce it. That I could see really playing out like across the rest of the show even.
Absolutely.
But I'm sure we'll see a little bit more of him. If not next episode, then maybe episode 7 or episode 8.
Yeah, I'm also curious if we're gonna see any more of the Viltrumites this season. I mean, I assume so.
I
Or
think
if,
so.
yeah, I there's just so much going on.
I know. It is kind of. It is kind of like crazy. Like, there's so much going on in this episode that isn't even related to the main like threat of the show. And yet, like, we're still kind of on the edge of our seats, even though we know, like, okay, Viltrum Empire is probably end game. They're gonna come down at some point. But this whole like secret storyline, and even the Lizard League like has me like really engaged and
Yeah.
really like again on edge the whole time, because clearly a lot of the characters in the show aren't safe. And so it's interesting to see to watch as certain characters do kind of kick the bucket, and kind of not knowing when or who that's going to be.
Yeah, I it's definitely keeping us on our toes. I'm curious if we're gonna see Omni-Man again this season. I assume we will, but how and when is beside me. But I think we see I see I think we see a glimpse into the rest of this season when we get to that post-credit scene with Alan. He's back.
He's back, and man is more swole than ever.
Yeah, I would have to say, I was like, damn, okay, Alan.
I noticed like when he like sat up, I was like, he's been working out.
Well, yeah, and I think it gives us so much a sense of hope to see Alan partner up with this Viltrumite who has gone rogue. And then when he meets Mark, I just think they're going to be a dynamic trio along with the rest of the Guardians of the Globe. I mean, that makes me really excited to see like where they're going to go, because for a while I was like, if it's just Mark, like along with the Guardians of the Globe defending Earth, like how are they going to get out of this?
Right. I don't know if they have the firepower to really go toe to toe with the Viltrumites. So it looks like Alan and I guess it's pronounced Thaddeus,
Oh, yes.
maybe, who obviously at the end of this episode reveals himself to be not just a Viltrumite, but the only Viltrumite that has since defied the Viltrum Empire, I guess
Yeah.
until Mark.
And what a crazy way to reveal you're a Viltrumite by ripping your beard off. That was
It
insane.
was so funny. Like, I just love how he does that, and Alan immediately knows. It's like they all have mustaches or something.
Yeah, no, that was great. And yeah, so I'm excited to see where that goes. I'm excited to see where Oliver goes and how quickly he ages and what kind of power he's gonna have too. I mean, Mark is so strong being half human, that half Viltrumite, that I'm sure Oliver will be strong and have different powers
Yeah.
as Mark. So Maybe he'll help him too. It's really interesting.
You think he would, they would like put him through school? How would that work?
I have no idea. I'm thinking at some point that Cecil will kind of take, not take over raising Oliver, but kind of put him in like a superhero, baby superhero training program.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see. While also, I think Debbie will kind of balance giving him a sort of normal life in the same way that she did with Mark. It'll just be maybe a little sooner that Oliver gets his powers and realizes who he is, because he is purple. So
yeah, he's gonna realize
hard to hide that.
Yeah, he's not like the other kids. He's purple.
Not at all. Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts of where you think this season's gonna go, Negan?
I think for sure we'll see Omni-Man again. I think there's like a 2 second clip in the trailer where we do see him held captive by the Viltrumites. So we'll see kind of how he gets out of that. I think it's General Kreg. Kregg, not Craig, like humans. It's like, is it General Krieg? It might be Krieg. Well, that is something
I don't know, but I like Craig.
We're just gonna call him General Craig for the rest of the show. I don't care if it's General Krieg. Anyway, we'll see. I think at the end of episode 4, he tells Mark that Nolan's gonna be executed. So we'll see how he wiggles his way out of that, and then from there, you know, will he go to Earth? I mean, he tells Mark, I think at the end of episode 4 or sometime during episode 4, that, you know, he can't go back there. But I imagine inevitably it will happen. I don't know if it'll happen this season, but I am definitely excited to, I mean, anytime Omni-Man is on screen, I mean, and just hearing J.K. Simmons' voice, like, it's just awesome.
Yeah, totally agree. We didn't even talk about Mark trying to find Omni-Man's books.
Oh.
Can't wait to see what's in those books, and if Mark finds them. Wow.
I know.
So much to look forward to.
Sold them. I know. I'm really curious what's in those books.
Yeah, or like if Mark doesn't find them, who's going to find them? And what that means. Oh my goodness, we have so much to look forward to.
He's going to have to track down like eBay user 4537.
Omni-Man fan 5828.
Yeah.
Oh, can't wait.
That's fun.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to this episode of Viltrumites, an Invincible podcast here on the Aspect Network. Negan, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at NeganTheStallion_. And you can find me on TikTok under the same handle, actually. But most importantly, you can find me on Letterboxd at Negan2000. And sometimes I post some really funny one-liners. So if you would like to follow me on any of those platforms, please do. What about you, Brie?
And the stallion he is. And you can find me online on Instagram at Brianna_Romero. And on TikTok, you can find me at Big Head Brie, 3 E's at the end of Brie. And if you want to follow me on Letterboxd and like my Dune review and get me to more likes than Negan's Dune review, you can follow me at Brianna Romero. It's just my name. But don't forget to subscribe here to The Aspect on YouTube and any platform where podcasts are found. Follow us on Twitter, also known as X, Instagram, and TikTok at The Aspect Co. And thanks so much for listening. And
think, Mark, think!